Project. Before we dive into this episode, I want to remind everyone that the Bench Booster program, if you're looking for an 8-week program that it's basically like extras, right? You can fit it into any program that you're doing at the moment. We just realized that, you know, people want to improve different aspects of their training, whether it's their squat, their deadlift, their bench press, their overhead press, but they don't want to throw out their whole program. Well, that's why we created the Boost programs. So you guys can go to the mymuscleproject.com/boost. The first program that we've created, the Bench Booster, the 8-week program, it's 2 20-minute sessions in a week. So it's very convenient, won't disrupt your regular training. You'll use stuff before. A lot of you said you haven't used bands in your training before. So you'll use bands for strength. You'll do tempo work. You'll do all sorts of kind of warm-ups and technique drills and stuff that's just going to create a really strong foundation for pressing. And basically you'll get, you know, so I would say, you know, minimum you're going to get a 5 kilo PB on your bench, no matter what level you're at, if you haven't implemented something like this before. And yeah, it's 25% off. So you can go to the mymuscleproject.com/boost while you're listening to this till the end of the month, and it's going to be 25% off. All right, guys, thanks so much. Let's jump into the after show. All right, My Muscle Project, welcome back to this episode of the after show. In the studio today, got some guests coming up. We've got the founder of Noble later today, interview I'm looking forward to. And we've got Andrew Papp back from his absurdly long endurance race. Hopefully, he'll be smaller than us. So, for the first time, we can kind of out alpha him.
Did he lose a limb on the trip?
I don't know, but man, he climbed some savage mountains. I can't wait to hear the stories. But, Raf, everyone's been asking, what the fuck was that thing that you posted on Instagram stories? That contraption.
So, we've stepped up the... what'd you call it? Spinal remodeling.
How many people messaged you about that? That's
quite a lot.
That thing was crazy.
Probably about 10 people. So it's like we've just been stepping it up week after week, right? So we're basically at like the most advanced level we've got up to now.
Yep.
Where there's a block under my lower back, putting it into like an arch, and then it like rounds your upper back, so the opposite way.
Okay. So lower back extension.
Yep.
Extra flexion in your upper back.
Yeah, and it's like a kind of a weight on top of your upper back pushing you in, like collapsing. So it's like hard to breathe. It feels like you have like smoking your whole life.
Like
right?
Someone sitting on your chest.
It's what I imagine it feels like when you're 90 and you've been smoking.
Mm.
And then my neck is over the block, and then there's like, you know, like those weight things like NFL players use to like get their necks or more boxes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the neck harness.
Yeah, like a neck harness. Right. Then there's like a helmet on my head with a weight. I think I'm up to like 9 kilos, 10 kilos dripping off.
Right.
So, I just feel like you feel like in the weird
10
position.
Kilos?
Yeah, you can't move.
Are you doing reps?
No, I just stay still for, I think I'm up, that was up to 15 minutes.
15 minutes. And is the idea like you have to relax underneath the...
Yeah, you relax. Okay. You can't fight.
But the tension, surely you'd have this inherent tension at first where you're resisting against it.
Yeah, and then you just completely relax. Like you have tension through your jaw because the weight's just like pulling down your jaw. So, I think some people wear mouth guards for it.
Yeah.
But it's basically like, I don't know if you've ever like fallen asleep and like your wrist is in a really weird position.
Yeah.
And then you wake up and it like hurts.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I've like fully stretched the ligaments.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you're going for.
Right.
So like you can't even get up out. Like you need help
getting
up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, you like literally need help. You're like when he takes it off, I'm like, I'll move.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they like pull you out of it. Because I think that's like the only way to really like make a long lasting change in your posture.
Okay. So is the idea that they're trying to reestablish the curve in your neck? By like forcing
and up
it
back.
Okay. Because you've lost it.
Yeah.
And then immediately after, let's say that next 2 hours, how do you feel then?
Yeah, you feel really different. Like your neck feels, I mean, it feels really good. Feel like a bit tall.
Yep.
And it's meant to take, it tends to take the pressure off the back of my neck where like the nerve is being pinched.
Mm.
And it does feel really free. And like it even feels different even probably the next morning.
Right.
After a couple of days, it kind of feels more like how it used to.
And any change in the innovation of your pecs or lats yet?
We've been working on it. I think it's working quite a lot more on my back.
Okay.
But I've got some...
So, your lats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm doing like progress photos and stuff. Can't see a massive difference yet in the photo, but in the gym, it does feel a lot better. They reckon it normally takes like 3 or 4 months.
We're just collecting a mad collection of before and afters
mm.
between you and me. Restoring pecs. Yours is muscle gain and mine's fat loss.
Yeah. I think I'm like my upper pecs are starting to come back a bit more.
Okay.
And
that's good. The shelf's important.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the lower pecs, they're like, man, it's maybe never.
Right.
But that's probably the same. But yeah, I think the upper pec is like starting to come together because at that point, it's almost like they do meet in the middle.
You so want,
I've got contraction
at the top. I feel like you want, if you could choose one or the other, you want upper chest.
Yeah, 100%.
Because it gets you the shelf, right? And it gets you that. Like, mad upper chest is, like, if you have really thick upper chest, it looks, the pec looks really nice and square. But if you have massive lower chest, it just looks like you got titties. Like, you took steroids, and then it just, like, started sagging. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you need muscles so that when you wear a muscle tank, everything's all good.
Yeah, 100%. So, interesting news. I don't know if you got wind of this, but Instagram has now, I don't know the exact details, but basically the gist of it is you can no longer advertise products like Skinny Tea, so things that make outrageous health claims. Like,
I don't think it's outrageous.
it's not.
Tea is low calories.
Yeah. And you can no longer advertise that to, I think it's people under 18.
Really?
So if you do, your post gets automatically banned and people's accounts have been getting shut down as well. Yeah.
But it's so tough because, I mean, nutrition is one of those things that unless you know a lot about it, it's really hard to discern what's legit and what's not.
Yeah, but it's just unproven health claims.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
like, well, I guess it makes sense. It's like what you normally can't get away with, putting a product in a store. Like, you couldn't put that tea in a store and be like, instant weight
exactly.
loss. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they've started cracking down on that. Like, a worldwide thing. And people's accounts are getting banned. That's crazy. Like, that's the whole thing I always think of. I'm like, okay. I like the podcast because, you know, you can't really take us off the air. It's audio recording. So, we can just publish this out to wherever we want.
We'll get banned from minors eventually.
Banned from what?
From playing to minors.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll see. But it's such a heavy investment in something that you just have no idea what they're going to do, right? It's just crazy. So, I just couldn't imagine waking up the next day and someone being like, oh, your account got shut down. Like, imagine the panic. That'd be like, okay, someone shut down.
Yeah, but fuck those Skinny Tea people. They'll just bring out some other stupid thing like,
oh, no.
Muscle building beer.
No, but it will honestly just, they'll ban it.
Yeah.
Like, they'll just, the algorithm will be there and it will not show the post. Yeah. It might not ban your account, but it will not show the post, which means the tide is definitely turning on this whole thing, on this whole influencer thing. So, yeah, I'll be curious to see what happens next. But look, at least for now, I'm not vegan anymore.
One more really important thing. This is more for our Australian listeners. So, I spoke to somebody. Can't say who it is, but he works at Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
And
Amazon.
Amazon Australia, I guess.
Right.
Massive place. I mean, a lot of people are probably employed by them. But apparently, they have their 10-year rollout of what they're coming to do in Australia. Included in the rollout is Whole Foods in Australia.
No way.
Yeah.
We should have a sponsorship.
Here we go. I was so excited. He's like, and he said it so nonchalant, like, oh, not a big deal, right? You know, so the 10-year rollout, they this, and they bring in Whole Foods. And like, whoa, stop.
10 years. Whoa, hold on. 10 years.
How? So, no. Whole Foods is not like the 10th year of this.
Right.
But this is like, it's just included in their 10-year rollout. I don't know exactly when
so
it is.
So, we'll have Whole Foods within a decade, guaranteed.
Basically, it's guaranteed in a decade from what this guy told me. His name was Jeff. And...
You said you weren't going to reveal his identity.
But yeah, apparently it's like a 10-year plan. And it's basically, in 10 years, minimum, we'll have like all the things that America's got now. So like the same day delivery, like anything in the world, the like super fast connections, Whole Foods, like all that stuff that Amazon has like right now, in like minimum 10 years, it'll be in Australia.
And will that be there before it's anywhere else in the world? Because it's in America. I assume UK.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. It's a good point. I don't know exactly, but I mean, Australia's like one of the biggest ones now that they're moving out to. I don't know why, but it's incredible for us. Because like I didn't realize until it was going through it how many things Australia doesn't have that America's got. Like America's been like totally transformed by Amazon.
Yeah, of course.
Whereas like we haven't been transformed at all.
Yeah.
Like you walk down the street, they went from like $12 million to like $1 billion in a year, right, in Australia. So it's exploded. But you walk down the street, you don't see any Amazon boxes.
No, you don't see the boxes. You do see some advertising, though.
You see advertising.
Yeah.
But like in America, you see the boxes at every house.
Yeah.
Well, where we were, you know, every single house.
Well, when we went to Sean's house, there were boxes there. When we went to
every
the
house we
apartments
visited,
in Philly, there was the boxes there.
Only like the serial killer Airbnb didn't have the boxes.
they don't sell the serial killers. It's on FBI's Most Wanted.
So anyway, that is like, I think if you're in health and fitness, having Whole Foods in Australia is incredibly good news.
Interesting. So you got to get peak into Whole Foods. That's the key, right?
Well, I think apparently what he was saying was like what you want to do now if you have like a health and fitness product is, yeah, get it on Amazon now. Start doing really, really well on Amazon. Because it's all about Amazon. So, people that have like Shopify stores now in America selling like health and fitness products, they'll take people from their store, be like, they'll like code in buttons, be like, don't buy it here, buy it on Amazon. because they because Amazon just like controls the market.
Right, right, right.
So you want your stuff selling on Amazon.
You
want
to be on there.
So you're like doing well on Amazon, and then yeah, if you're selling heaps of peach chocolate on Amazon, I guess you're much more in the front running to be in Whole Foods.
It's like a short list for them. It makes sense, right? They just go, okay, what should we put in our stores? Here are the staples. Here's the new stuff. Here's like the list. And these guys are top in here.
Probably. I think the other side might be tough for Aussies because they start bringing in all the American products.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're fucking bringing in Whole Foods. That's the way the life goes, right? You know, it's just exactly. Yeah, it's established. It's like the, what will be really interesting, kind of a sidetrack, is when marijuana becomes legal in Australia, if any Australian companies that are outside of big farms that are growing it, if any, you know, dispensaries or delivery services, if they will take off, or because the American market and the Canadian market is so well established already, they'll just come in straight away and they'll just like launch instantly. Mm. Or they'll just make an Australian version of it. They'll just launch instantly because they have the operation systems, they have the social media channels, they have the reach, they have the everything, right? They have the money.
Probably depends if Australia... Is Australia good for growing it? We have pretty cheap land.
Yeah, yeah. Like...
Probably grow it here.
Great conditions. You just need heat and sun, right? Like most of the year. So I reckon that, there won't be much room for many Australian companies to do well because they'll need a few years to kind of find their feed and, you know, work on their operations and create connections. But all that's done, American just go copy-paste straight away. You know, they've got huge established companies already. So it'll be interesting if Australia can even crack that market. We'll see. We'll see.
But on the topic of Whole Foods, how did your vegan week finish out?
Yeah, so after 5 days, I decided to try vegetarian. So I ended up on Saturday, I had dairy. That's a regular milk. Now, here's the thing. I was, for most of the week, I was having oat milk in my coffee.
Oat milk?
Oat milk, yeah.
Okay, cool. That's vegan though, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And the problem with oat milk is that for it to be really delicious in your coffee is that it has to be heated really finely. And what I was finding is it takes a really, really skilled barista to consistently get oat milk to the same consistency as regular milk. And that wasn't very many people. So I'd order oat milk, but the problem is when it gets overheated, it goes watery and sour. Mm. So they pour it in and your whole coffee's ruined. Like you can't drink your coffee. It tastes disgusting. That would happen so many times that it ended up being exciting to get back to dairy just so I knew my coffee. Because there's nothing worse than waking up in the morning. The coffee is like the thing you look forward to, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't know. It's like it's 50-50 if it's coming out delicious or if it's coming out sour and you've got to throw it out. And it's kind of an awkward thing to go up and be like, hey, this is disgusting. Try again.
Yeah, and then he looks at you and goes, well, stop being vegan. I'll make you a good coffee.
How about I just put real milk in it? But no, look, I made a video on the Instagram TV just kind of explaining the process. Some of the most interesting things were going into the supermarket and finding the meat-free section or like the fake meat section, because the first time I went there, it's like kind of hidden in the frozen food section. It's like in between like all the expiring discounted food that you can get really cheap and like all the sausages. And I'm standing there and then I'm clearly next to someone who's also a vegan. Mm. Like the only people that are standing in front of this thing looking at tofu and like fake meats and stuff.
Is it sort of like, you know, when two black guys see each other like, oh, what's up, bro? Like, it's like, you know, we're both black. It's like... That kind of camaraderie? Is it like that with when you're in the vegan section? Like, oh, sup, bro? Like,
yeah, it was. Vegan? Yeah, it was. So this girl, she kind of like double takes at me. Because I guess when you stand in front of that section, the last person you expect to see there is someone like me, right? And so she double takes and then she's just staring at me. And I just stare at her and we just make eye contact. It's really awkward. And then she just kind of gives you, you know, that where she slightly turns up, like sealed mouth, sealed lips and that slight smirk on like just one side. Like, oh, hello. That little head nod.
But you're like, no, I'm shopping for a friend.
I'm like, oh, hello. I'm like, I'm new around here.
It's a 1 week trial.
And look, I ended up spending, the interesting part was, besides obviously interacting with that section of the supermarket, I ended up spending $60 more on my groceries in the week.
Yeah.
That was in 5 days. So I think in 7 days, maybe I would have done a bit more. But the thing is as well, a lot of people talk about when they make the shift to a vegan diet or a very heavily plant-based diet, there is a massive increase in their vitality. I didn't experience anything like that. My reasoning being that, or my logic behind it being, I already ate a really nutritious, healthy diet. And I think a lot of people, when they make the switch, they're not. Mm. Now they're making an effort to obviously eat all these plants, potatoes, fruits, vegetables, everything like that. And in the past, they weren't doing it at all. And so, of course, they're going to feel better. But then they almost like demonize their original omnivore diet and meat and stuff. But I would theorize that if they just kept that amount of plant proteins and healthy fats and nuts and seeds and everything like that, and they added the meat back in, they would feel even better. So overall, I would say that it is extremely inconvenient. What ends up happening is to hit good macros, to eat lean sources of protein constantly, the amount of foods that you have ends up becoming extremely narrowed down. So think about it for a second, right? If you need to eat 50 grams of protein, you want to eat 50 grams of protein and you want to protect your other macros in a way, right? You want to know, okay, I'm getting 50 grams of protein and I might get a fraction of carbon fat. Now, if you want that on a vegan diet, your first choice is the supplement, which is not ideal. You don't want to be supplementing like more than 20% of your diet. That would even be the max. And then you also just want to make sure, sorry, the other substitute would be tofu, because tofu is like kind of the leanest protein. Because beans and lentils, which are like high in protein, they're almost 1-to-1 for carb and protein.
Yep.
Then your fake meats are like 1-to-1 fat. So there's not that many options. And so tofu is kind of like your best option. There's some other ones in there as well. But again, they come with too much carb and fat. So it's kind of, I'm in an interesting position now because I'm not completely anti-vegan, but for myself, I almost had this realization like, wow, I probably don't need to eat as much meat as I do. And not even like substitute it with like fake meats or anything. It would just be, okay, I could just have more carbs and fats and plants. And because, you know, what you start to realize is, you know, brown rice has protein in it and like these vegetables have protein in it. And maybe I just don't need as much animals, because one thing that definitely was apparent was my stomach was lighter. It wasn't as heavy all the time. And so I wouldn't say it improved my digestion, because I wasn't bloated. I was fighting a little bit more. I think that was just due to the fiber and stuff, but it wasn't like a dramatic increase. And then when I started having meat again, I was like, okay, like I'm a little bit more full now, but it didn't like hurt my digestive system. But a few people have told me since, oh, you know, it's going to take more time. It takes like 30 days for your gut biome to kind of change to that way. And a few people were also saying like, you know, you didn't go full vegan because, you know, you needed to increase the amount of plants you were eating to like feel the greater differences. But I ate the normal amount of veggies I ate, which
surely
is like
you would be eating a lot, because think about how many calories you've got to eat compared to, you're like on the high end of calories in a day.
Yeah. Well, I reckon I still eat vegetables 4 times a day. I have a green smoothie in the morning. My 2 meals in the middle of the day have vegetables in them. And at night, I have vegetables as well. So I think that just so much of the claims that people make about vegan in themselves are just, they're just misguided. I think you can still have a really healthy omnivore diet. Speaking of which, we did go and see Game Changers on Sunday, my last day vegetarian. So we will get to that at the end of the show. If anyone doesn't know what Game Changers is, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
We'll get to it. But final interesting thing was, I wanted to track my HRV and my WHOOP with the change of diet. Because, you know, that was one of the other things is people say, oh, you know, you can sleep better, you recover better, all this sort of stuff. And so I tracked my WHOOP for the entire 7 days. And my recovery scores actually were down. Now, I'm a little bit sick today. So, I think, I don't know if I can blame the diet on this. I did go out on Saturday night and probably had one too many beers. So, I was feeling a bit dusty on Sunday. However,
beers are vegan though, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, at the start of the week, what I noticed is I couldn't get my recovery above 50%, which was strange because my training was fine. It did not impact my training at all. Actually, what I found was, I was able to train quite well. Mm. Like I was feeling quite good in training. However, I was actually more sore than I normally am. So it's weird. It's kind of like it did help my performance, but it hurt my recovery in a way. So obviously there's lots of factors that tie into this, but I was monitoring the WHOOP closely and the HRV score was dropping throughout the week. So not sure if it had to do with the vegan diet, the switch up in what I was eating and stuff, but it definitely impacted my recovery, no doubt. I would say that if I was to do that long term, if I'd have to do it for a month, I would have to spend more time researching some supplements. Obviously, I was missing some vital nutrients, macronutrients in there somehow that were impacting my recovery. I seem to be sleeping fine. My sleep numbers seem pretty good. But yeah, just overall HRV and resting heart rate was being affected. So that was extremely interesting.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing I noticed on the sleep. So it also gives you your like sleep for the whole week, right? It tells you like every day, what time you went to bed, what time you woke up. And it also gives you every day, I don't know if you've seen it, but like a recommended amount of sleep, right? Like,
yeah,
you should like get into bed this time.
It adds up all the errors you've made.
If you want to wake up at this time.
Yeah.
And what I notice is like the more consistent my sleep is during the week, the smaller the recommended amount of sleep I need is in the night.
Yeah.
So when you get up at like same time every single day, it starts to like come down and down and down until it's like, oh, you only need like, it was under 8 hours. It was like only recommending like 7 hours 50. Whereas when my sleep was like more helter skelter, like, oh, get up early, get up later. It was like, it was really high. It was like, you need 8 hours and 50 minutes of like sleep. It's like, obviously you probably don't get.
Yeah.
But that was like the recommended amount. So it's interesting. Like the recommended amount comes down and down as you sleep more consistently, which does make a good case of being like incredibly consistent with your sleep. Because then in the long run, you can spend less time asleep.
Yeah.
Still recover.
Well, like I read out before, like because you fill out that little questionnaire every morning, it takes 10 seconds. It said that from the last 30 days of data, when I share my bed, I am 9%. I sleep 9% better, which is interesting. So that's some pretty good data on there. Anyway, all the stuff we always talk about, guys. If we mention a sponsor or anyone in the show, it's always in the description in the show notes. So you guys can go check it out there. So all the stuff's there. All right, let's get into some listener questions for this week. Maybe people are throwing vegan at me, but I think that ship has sailed. But look, let me say, I have learned a ton about that, and I have only adoration and praise for the people who are healthy and have been vegan for a long time. And especially if you've been vegan, like in the last 10 years, like it was very difficult. I think it's a lot easier now with all the meat substitutes and stuff, but yeah, good on you for sticking it out as long as you have, especially if you've managed to train and stay in shape and be healthy, because we all know there's plenty of fat, overweight vegans out there. But people, which is worse, right? Now you're just sick and overweight, but if you've actually looked after yourself, congratulations. That's incredible. Okay. First one is from Declan Kerrigan 90. I've got knee pain behind my kneecap from previous traumas. Had surgery to fix recurring dislocations, and the doctor recommends not to load up the knee. I get pain and swelling after back and front squats, so I've replaced them with good mornings in the program I work with, though isolation exercises don't hurt it too much. I want to build muscle around my knees to protect them and get better function from them. What else can you recommend?
Good question.
This is a perfect question for us. Anyone that doesn't know, if you're a new listener,
we've both got two knees.
We've had a long-standing history of knee pain. Long-standing history.
Yeah, we have both had a lot of knee pain, and I think probably the mistake, it sounds like the listener's making, the mistake I made as well, is where you say it starts hurting on back and front squats, right? So you're like, oh, it's quite a bit of knee flexion in those movements, so like I'll cut that out, I'll just do the good mornings.
Yeah.
That, for me, and I've seen it in other people, can be a pretty big mistake, because then you like completely stop training, say, the teardrop muscle around your kneecap, because you're like never going into much knee flexion at all. So yeah, it's like, it's better because you're not hurting it. You're doing movements like good mornings, but you can't just forever for the rest of your life do movements that only take you into 10 degrees of knee flexion and expect the knee to be like super strong and all the muscles around it. You've got to start going into the areas that maybe you're a little bit scared to. So I remember like we did some stuff where you like stand on one of those, what's it called? Like the really downhill platform, like crazy opposite.
I don't think it has a name. It's just kind of like a wedge.
A wedge that's basically downhill. Imagine just being on like ridiculously high weightlifting shoes. Like you're basically on high heels.
Yeah.
You're like almost vertical and you do a squat. So it's like your knee's going way over your toe. I found that sort of training like really, really useful. And like, it was like scary because I'm like, oh man, this is going to kill my knees. But I started doing like really slow eccentrics, training the knee to go over the toe. And eventually just started to really pay off. And then going back to movements like back squats and front squats were fine. But I think going completely away from it, I don't know exactly your situation, like could be a mistake in the long run.
Well, he mentioned that it's got, I'm just reading here that he's had a surgery on it to fix multiple dislocations. So obviously having a strong, stable knee is very important. Now, generally what will happen is if you go into, if the knee travels further and further over the toe, it's not a bad thing. But you will put more pressure on the tendons and that will probably pull the kneecap back onto kind of the irritated site more and more. So what I would look at doing is some kind of lunge or split squat where you can keep the knee directly over the ankle. That may give it some relief, because it sounds like if good mornings are giving it relief, then it's a similar sort of movement or a similar sort of knee position to a split squat. So I would just stick with split squats. Like, there is no reason that, I mean, you can load those up heavy. You know, there's videos of guys doing 500-pound split squats, you know, and really strong legs. I would argue that, you know, if anyone that didn't have split squats in their program added them in a proper strength cycle, it would improve their squats regardless. It's like the exercise for legs that, and I think they're better than lunges because you create tension the whole time. Whereas in a lunge, you can always like cheat it a little bit because you're moving. You know, you can always like bounce your kneecap off the floor. You can kind of miss the floor a bit. Or then as you stand, you can kind of shift your weight forward or shift your weight back. Whereas the split squat, it puts you in that fixed position and it just hits the glutes, hamstrings and quads like nothing else. And it obviously fixes your instability as well. So I would start with something like a split squat, even unloaded. If it's too hard with your back foot elevated, you can go front foot elevated. That's a regressed version of it. And then just start from there and just build that exercise up. And look, if back and front squats always irritated and always hurt it, stop doing back and front squats for a while.
That's number one.
You know, just give that movement a rest for a while. Keep training it, like Raph said, and then try returning to it, but just return to it slowly. I think the errors we always made when we were trying to return back with knee pain is like, okay, I've taken 6 weeks off. It's time to catch back up.
Yeah.
You know, squats is my weakness. You know, I've lost time to make up. And you're just putting on weight way too fast. And load has a massive... Load is, and a volume is tightly correlated to pain, right? So you just have to manage that shit so carefully. Anyone that says, oh, you know, I started back on the bar today and it's fine. And they come back next week and they're like, ah, fucking back to square one. I'll be, what do you do though? Oh, I did 90%. I'm like, well, you should be hitting 90% 6 months from now, you know, but we're just impatient naturally.
One last thing I'll mention is you can YouTube terminal knee extensions. I think it's like TKE is the abbreviation. And I don't know if you remember, we listened to Buddy Morris. He was Mike Wodenko's like mentor. And he trains like a ton of NFL athletes.
In the US?
Yep.
Yeah,
I think he's like now maybe the strength coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just trained like a ton of NFL athletes. And he has like every single athlete do a shit ton of volume of terminal knee extensions. Basically, just imagine like you're standing up tall. And then there's a band around your knee, pulling your knee towards like a pull-up bar. So it's like pulling your knee bent and you're just straightening your knee over and over again.
Against the resistance of
the resistance. And I have done them before. And anyway, he's a massive believer in those for like any field sport athlete.
Yeah. Awesome. Hopefully that's helpful. We love fixing knees because we took so long to do it ourselves. So any knee questions, just keep sending them in. Okay. So next question is from... Chakron Junior Amon. He asks, I just bought the Bench Boost program, can't wait to hit up to 3 plates. After show question, is it possible to have a good performance at high level 2-day CrossFit competition while only training 1 hour a day, 5 days a week? I'm guessing the amount of volume might end up being an issue in regards to recovery. It's a good question.
Yeah, I think we've definitely given this a go. I think that in terms of actually getting your body like to good enough to prepare, like to perform well at a competition like that, 100% it's enough because you're training 5 hours a week.
Yeah.
But you do have to give it a go doing like multiple events on a day over 2 days just to like
in the lead up.
You just got to give it a go. It's not even just like the physiological adaptation. It's also just like the mental adaptation of like training, being tired and doing again. It's also just like practicing your nutrition so you can learn to like do that and like what do I eat so I feel good. If you've like never done that, you probably struggle a bit on the day. So it's like more of just like a practice. But I think in terms of actually getting your body like strong enough and fit enough, of course.
Yeah, exactly what you said. And everyone in these competitions, the 2-day competitions, they always try and win the first workout. That's like the biggest mistake. It's almost like if you lost the first workout on purpose, you may be better off overall in the 2 days because everyone just cooks themselves so hard on the first workout. They're nervous. Adrenaline dump, they're fresh, they're peaking, and they just go way too hard that come the second workout, they almost don't want to be there.
Yeah.
They're basically giving up in the workout. And that's just because they didn't pace themselves. And if you're only doing one workout a day, you can go pretty hard because you're like, okay, I've got 24 hours to recover before my next workout, potentially more if you've got a rest day. So you don't really learn multiple workout per day pacing. So yeah, exactly what you said. You probably just have to spend a week doing a few workouts in a day just so you can kind of find the pacing for yourself, but in terms of the volume, you'll be able to manage it fine.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got a long training history. If you've been training weights for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, like your body can tolerate it. It can't tolerate you going out way too hot in that first workout and then just being in the hole for the other workouts. And like you said, not recovering, so not fueling properly. not hydrating properly throughout the day, all those things. So, and hopefully that answers that question. It should be helpful. Next question is from Sep Fitness. She asks, I have a training journal and my 100-day goal is 20 consecutive strict pull-ups. I'm stuck at 12. What is your advice to make progress towards my goal?
We don't know how far into the 100 days she is. Assuming you're going to have like 100 days.
Maybe she's at the start.
To add 8 and pretty much double. It's a great question. I mean, first of all, it's awesome, particularly for a female, to have like a 20... It's a strict pull-ups, right?
Yep,
20 rep strict pull-up goal. It's very impressive. I still think that when your goal is... Because 20 is like not a crazy big set, right? Like, you don't need to be... It's not like a huge endurance set, like a set of 50 of some exercises. So, it's like still pretty low. You just need to get really good at pull-up. So, I find that those strategies where you do like the creating volume throughout the day could generally be more helpful in these circumstances where you're not trying to like all the time push up your biggest sets. So, like sets of 10 where like they're really, really hard.
Yep.
But just doing like heaps of easy sets of 4 or 5 until you're like being able to smash out like whatever, 10 sets of 6, 15 sets of 7 in a day, like super easily.
Mm.
And your body feels really, really good. Has more sustainability because you get so many more pull-ups done throughout the week.
Yeah.
And that will probably still lay the platform for being able to smash out 20.
Yeah. I can't remember what the technique is called that you just described.
Grease the groove.
Grease the groove. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's literally just... It's like if you have a pull-up bar in your gym or at home or whatever, it's like every time you walk past it, it's like do 3 pull-ups.
Yeah.
So rather than, look at how many pull-ups you can do right now in the set, like you said, it's how many pull-ups can I get done today or in a week? Because if you do a workout and you're up to pull-ups, like you're probably going to hit somewhere between like 30 to 50 pull-ups.
Yeah.
But over the course of 12 hours of being awake, that's nothing. Like if you bang out 3 and then you walk off and then you come back, you bang out 3, you walk off, you come out, bang up 3. And that was in the space of 10 minutes. Yeah, that was like the total time you did that exercise in the gym. But that's 10 minutes in 12 hours.
Yeah.
And you did 9 already. Like, you've got so much more you can do. So, heaps of potential there. That's probably the best advice. I mean, outside of that, you can add in accessory exercises and bicep curls and rotator cuff work. But doing actual pull-ups themselves, with variations, I would say, as well, would be helpful as well. So, pull-ups with different variations. So, hands over, hands under, mixed grip. If you have, like, attachments, like ball attachments, they can help with your grip. Increasing your grip strength helps a lot. So, hanging, like, getting really good at hanging can be helpful as well. So, some days you may be sore. You're like, oh, I don't want to do any more pull-ups. Make it a hanging day. You know, active hanging.
Man, I would venture to say that she could probably never do a set more than 10 throughout the whole next 100 days and still get 20 on the last day.
If 10 became extremely easy.
When you can just make like, okay, cool. Like, yeah, I knocked out like 13 sets of 8 today. When it's nothing like that, you'll have 20.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is logically doesn't make sense because people are like, I have to be at 18 or 19.
You don't.
Nah, it's way different. It's like people that, okay, it's like training deadlift, right? With really good form. Okay. So say I can deadlift, I used to be able to deadlift 500 pounds, right? Before I hurt my back. Now, if I just constantly do like really high quality sets and accumulate volume between like 140 and 180.
Kilos.
Yeah.
So how many pounds?
That's 200. It's like 230. I pull 230, right? So,
So it's like 315 to 405 and your deadlift is 500.
But I spent lots of time just doing tons of reps, not even close to failure, but really high quality form. And just pulling fast and just with perfect technique for just reps and reps and reps and sets. Like, you could even deadlift like 3 or 4 times a week doing that. Exactly right. 500 pounds comes up. Haven't pulled anything close to it in a while and it would probably come up or close to it. The body's strange like that. Mm. You know, you can just that sub-maximal volume can like really contribute to that high-end strength. Now, some people would argue that. They say like you always have to pull heavy. But I think if you pulled heavy before or if you've done maximal work before, like, it's more if you've had a long training history. Like, the longer your training history, when you know you can't touch your max very often, you have to stay away from it pretty often. You can't really go there that often. People with high training ages, that always touch their max.
Yeah.
They never recover.
Yeah, 100%.
Cool. Okay, hopefully that's helpful. Next question. This is the follow-up from last week. Remember that guy goes, what is your purpose?
Oh, no.
Sorry, guys. He asked... he wanted to say, obviously, like, hey, I'm like a real person, but he wanted to ask it a little bit differently. He goes, It was a little bit too general for an appropriate answer. So because of this, I want to ask something differently. You know about Simon Sinek and the debate about the why. Start with your why. I'd be interested in what your why is and how it changed about time. In addition to that, I'm interested in how it affects your daily life. So he wants to know your why. And he said he has another question in mind for a future episode. Do you have any specific strategies for applying new knowledge, especially from podcast episodes, books, and seminars? I struggle bringing new knowledge into practice. Just going to get some water. Go for it.
Well, to answer, I'm having a bit of trouble answering your first party question because I haven't actually read that Simon Sinek book, but I know like everybody else on the whole planet has. But I will go have a crack at answering the second half of the question, so having trouble implementing. This is one I think I also struggled with for a long time because, man, you can just listen to four different podcasts on a long road trip and you can barely remember what the first podcast was about by the time you get to the end. But I think that the best way to get better at implementing is just speed of implementation. So now often when I like either some sort of like video content that I'm trying to learn or some sort of book, or if I'm like, this is something that I want to take away and make a change, just trying to implement it basically within 24 hours of learning it is usually the ideal. So not like, before I might like, oh, I'll write it down. It's like a mad idea and I'll come to it like at a future time. That basically future time never happens. So I find to get better at implementing, if it's something you actually want to do and you're like, this is something that could make a difference, just try implementing the first step of it within 24 hours. And if it's a good idea, maybe you might get the ball rolling. If not, then you just leave it.
Yeah.
But if you want, if you're like, I'm serious about this actually being implemented, then it shouldn't really take any longer than 24 hours.
Yeah, there's one book that I've been reading recently, Atomic Habits. I'd recommend it for anyone. And we want to get the author on because it's such a good book. But he talks about there are two different stages of habit change, right? And one of the stages is motion. And one of the stages is action. And motion is what most people would like to think is action. But the problem with motion is it feels like action, but it's not actually getting you any closer to the result. So to give you an example, right? You're listening to a podcast right now and you want to improve, so that you want to get the pull-ups, right? Mm. So accumulating more knowledge, listening to podcasts, writing down notes, writing down different exercises you can do, setting out a program, that's all motion.
Yep.
And it feels like action, but it doesn't actually get you any closer towards your goal. But there is some motion in certain tasks, which is mandatory. Like you might, if you don't have a pull-up program, you have to go get a pull-up program, yeah, right? So there is some motion involved. But the problem is most people get stuck in motion because motion makes them feel like they're getting closer towards whatever result that they want. But action is where you actually get the result. And so with all these things, like you said, you have to get out of the motion stage, which is like accumulating knowledge or listening to more podcasts and into the action stage with these things. And everyone's got something. I've got something, that I want to change. Like my newest thing is I want to learn to touch type. And
what's touch type?
Touch typing is, it's like where you've got your fingers on the keyboard and you're typing. You don't need to look at it.
Oh, yeah.
I think you can do that.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, I love doing it.
Yeah. But you can do it, but you use the proper, like, you've got your index fingers, yeah, on the two little things. Yeah, I can't do that.
Right.
And so I want to learn how to do that. Just efficiency. I'm figuring I'm going to be fucking typing for the next 50 years, so I want to get better at it. And I started a little bit, but then I fell off, and it's kind of the most recent thing I'm trying to change. And there's just like an online software I'm just learning from. But after listening to this book, I was thinking to myself, oh, this is why it hasn't been working. And the reasons that he talked about is because with anything that you want to change, any new thing you want to implement, any new habit, right? The most successful way you can do it is choose the exact time and the exact location that you will be doing it. So the more specific you are of when you need to do it, the more obvious the cue will be. So if you're like, okay, I want to drink... I want to start drinking more water, right? A lot of people, that's a change they want to make. It's something that you and I wanted to change recently, right? The best way you could give someone to start drinking more water is get as specific as possible. So at within 5 minutes of waking up, or even within 60 seconds of waking up. So you have like, you wake up and you're like, fuck, I got 60 seconds. You must go you must go directly to your tap, pour yourself 500 mils of water. So find something that has 500 mils, yeah, whatever it is, and drink the whole thing in one go, right? The more specific it is, the more obvious the cue is and the easier it is to replicate because you know exactly when to do it. You add any ambiguity to any habit change and you're less likely to do it. And it makes complete sense. And what I realized was I was just waiting for a moment in the day where I felt like, oh, touch typing, learning touch typing now would be convenient. So what I need to do is specifically put in the time, location, and days that I'll be learning how to do this. So I haven't made the plan for it yet. I'm procrastinating that. But I know once I do, it'll get done, which is why it's so effective to book classes or training into your own calendar. A lot of people don't put training in their calendar, but if you put training in your calendar, you know, Creature Fitness, 6 a.m. every day, you know, and you add that shit to your Google Calendar, it's way less likely to get missed.
Well, you like acknowledge it when you book something over it.
Yeah. So that is what I would recommend. You take the thing that you want to change, and then you obviously look at the steps that will be required to implement that change, and just start putting it in at an exact time and location, and make it as specific as possible. Because if it's also like start reading more, you would say like, okay, read for 10 minutes, get a sand timer, turn that thing and just start doing it. And he also says, the more you start patterning this behavior, there becomes no resistance to it. And you're getting out of bed and you're just going straight for the tap. And it's like automatic. You don't have to think about it. And that process doesn't take as long as people think. But there's obviously a lot of resistance to change it in the beginning. So hopefully that's helpful. That book I would recommend anyone goes and get. Okay. Last question we have for today is from Grant S., who I believe has asked some questions before. They're quite good usually. He goes, this might be a stupid question, but I'm curious about the physiological processes that are in play into getting bigger and stronger from short, heavy Metcons. Every coach I've ever spoken to has said, if you want to get bigger, you have to do short, heavy Metcons. Is this true in your experience? I don't know what coaches you've spoken to, but I haven't.
Man, I feel like I've read this question. I reckon you have a serious misunderstanding here. I think what the coaches were trying to tell you is that if you're small and say you're competing in CrossFit, then you need to do a lot of short, heavy Metcons because you're going to suck at them. Because big people are good at short, heavy Metcons and small people are not good at them. So I think what like this misunderstanding is, like, you need to do them if you want to get good at them because you're naturally going to be poor at them. It's not that like the big people got big doing them. They just were already big and that's why they're good at them.
You reckon that's what he meant? You reckon that's what...
No, I think that's maybe like the misunderstanding he's got.
You reckon?
I don't think many strength coaches are like short, heavy Metcons to actually get big.
No, I think some people would say that.
Really?
Yeah, because...
Well, I mean, it's going to get you bigger, I guess, than something really long because, and slow, but...
Well, what I'm exactly. What I'm thinking is long and slow, generally the weights are lighter, and it's longer and more aerobic. And generally, like, bigger, you know, you keep it short and sharp, then you're not tapping into your aerobic system as much. That's more into your strength system. But at the end of the day, like, if you're doing short... Length of time, I wouldn't be too concerned about, really. It's just like how much weight's on the bar, right? How heavy is the workout? Yeah, if it's a heavier workout, you're going to put on more strength. You're going to probably put on more muscle. Like, that's just, you know, if you did 60 kilo deadlifts in a workout for the rest of your life, if it took 5 minutes or it took 25 minutes, it's still 60 kilos. Whereas if it's 140 kilos, of course you're going to get bigger and stronger, whether it's 5 minutes or it's 25 minutes. So, logically, it just makes sense that the more weight that's on the bar, you're going to get heavier and stronger. I wouldn't say the time domain's as important. Obviously, if it's just heavier, you just can't go as fast. Sorry, if it's heavier and it's longer, you just can't go as fast. You'll just naturally have to slow down to stretch out in the time domain. But it's more about the weight that's on the bar, if anything. All right, let's make a shift. Game changers. People have been talking about this one for a while. I did want to do a proper review on it. If anyone doesn't know what Game Changers is, it is the new film from Arnold Schwarzenegger and James Cameron. Basically, it is...
It's a sequel to Avatar, right? vegans.
Yeah, sequel to Avatar. It's a documentary, and it is about plant-based... Because, you know, they're very, very particular with their terminology. They never really said vegan and vegetarian. They're like plant-based athletes versus, essentially, animal protein athletes. Animal product athletes. Very interesting. Now, you can start, Raph, but I want to bring up the article that I sent you.
Yeah.
About the movie after we finish watching it.
So, I mean, yeah, there's three... I mean, obviously, they use the code words, but they're talking about vegan. There's three reasons I see to go vegan in the world. There's the ethical reason, the environmental reason, and then there's like the health benefits slash sports performance type reason. And this documentary heavily focuses on the strength and performance and health reasons of going vegan. And they like touch on the environmental and they touch on the ethical, but barely actually. Whereas a lot of the documentaries in the past, like Earthlings and stuff that I think we've reviewed before, focuses much more on the ethical reasons, like, or cowspiracy, stuff like that. There's different documentaries. A lot of the time, they're looking at, like, how bad factory farming is and stuff and the meat products that you're actually consuming. So, it's a pretty interesting angle from that point of view to go after that. I mean, the only problem with it for people that actually know about nutrition is that that's probably the weakest of the three arguments as well, is the sports performance and health benefits of going vegan. The other ones are definitely stronger, but the ethical one probably being the strongest. But the movie was pretty good. I think it's definitely aimed at people. I mean, it's basically a sales pitch for going vegan in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it's particularly targeted, obviously, at the masses. So it's not really targeted at you and me or listeners or probably of the My Muscle Project. It's more targeted to people that, like, don't know very much about nutrition.
Yeah.
You know, same people that fall for low carb, same people that fall for high carb. Like, cool, like, you can fall
for
anything.
So most of the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, most of the world. Because they've got better stuff to do than read about nutrition articles all day.
Yeah.
That's who it's obviously targeted against. And that's why, like, some of the stuff in the movie, when you know about it, you're like, that, how can you say that? But it's like, well, who are they targeting, right?
Well, this is where I feel like it's our job, is to, like, as people that spend the majority of our lives learning about this stuff, and then obviously using this platform to communicate to people, the general population, that, or, you know, I'm sure that a lot, everyone's listening to this, maybe they're into the health and fitness industry more than the average person, but I'm sure they're surrounded by a lot of people, co-workers, family, friends that are just gen pop, and will watch something like that, and they'll want to know, fuck, is that legit or not? And this is why we do, like, the comprehensive research for you guys, and we go watch films like this so we can, because, you know, if What the Health made an impact, man, this is going to make huge waves, right? Because the amount of people they have behind it, they had, who's the F1 champion?
Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, Lewis Hamilton in there and stuff. Like,
yeah,
crazy.
If you ever heard of Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's like a bodybuilder, movie maker. they had massive
Kendrick
names.
Farris, the
they've clearly got a lot of celebrities and, like, entrepreneurs, like, putting money behind this.
Yeah. Now, if you didn't know, James Cameron does have a heavy percentage in a meat substitute company. So, if you follow the money, obviously, he has an incentive to push, you know, these fake meats when they come out, because he's going to make more money from
Speaking of heavy percentages, always painful getting nutrition advice with someone that's got a pretty heavy percentage of body fat on them as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's a good article that Men's Health actually put out. They weren't able to be bought off for this film. And if you have watched the film, there are multiple different studies that are cited that he talks about. And then Men's Fitness or whoever is in involved in this went and did their research and had a look at all the studies and tried to basically validate all the claims that were made. Firstly, the very first study that he talks about is about, like, these Roman spean
vegetarians. It's not a study.
Gladiators. It wasn't a study.
That's not a study.
And he said, okay, so you've set the entire premise for this movie for the first thing saying that in this research study, and it wasn't even a study. So, you just lied straight off the bat.
But it was also just so weak. It was like, these Roman soldiers ate a lot of vegetables.
Yeah.
And then they make, and, like, no one here is arguing a lot of vegetables is not good.
Yeah.
But the jump they're then going to, so no one should ever eat meat again.
Yeah. And the, you know, the part that made me, like, I was basically booing in the cinema. I was going, no, it's outrageous, was when they had the Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz. Like, that struck a chord with me because, yes, Nate Diaz eats plants. Yes, Conor McGregor eats meat. But here's the thing. They, without saying it directly, they implied that he won in the first fight because he was plant-based.
So, they basically said it directly.
That's ridiculous. Okay, you know what's so ridiculous about that? What about the second fight?
Yeah.
Conor won. I'm like, what? Did he just go plant-based all of a sudden? That is what's so ridiculous about
it. What about all the fights? Like, it's not like they took an aggregate and be like, oh, we looked at it and, like, all the vegetarians are winning all the fights.
Yeah, it's
crazy. Like, dude, we found a fight where a vegan beat a meat eater. And pretty much the whole movie was basically a combination of anecdotes and studies. But, I mean, everybody knows...
But a lot of them weren't real studies as well.
No, or just, like, I mean, there's just studies, like, showing how good vegetables are for you.
Mm.
You know, and just... People have to realize that the onus of proof on a vegan is so much harder than on an omnivore. Because an omnivore is like, yeah, vegetables are great. 100% beetroot is good for performance. But what we're saying is just adding a small piece of, like, fish or meat to that incredibly good, wholesome, vegetable-full diet doesn't make you worse off.
Yeah.
In fact, it's either the same or it's better.
That's like cigarettes.
And they're trying to say, like, no. Like, any piece of any animal product added to your diet is horrific.
Yeah.
And, like, that is an argument that I don't think people realize how hard that is to claim. And if they think there's heaps of good science on that claim, like, there's not.
Mm. Well, how about when they took the, I can't remember what the, is it the Tennessee Titans or something? Whatever the NFL yeah. team is. And they're like, yes, you know, we haven't made the playoffs in like 15 years. And now the whole team's like started eating all this.
No, it was like 14 of them are getting vegan meal delivery.
Yeah. And I was thinking to myself, okay, but what did we hear in the from the college athletes, right? And college, you know, college to NFL, right? Yeah. It's a direct line. And what were they saying? They're like, man, I love Popeye's chicken.
They have the worst diets.
The worst diet.
The worst diets.
And now they're like, yeah, we're eating this sick diet, but it's loaded with vegetables. Yeah. It's loaded with micronutrients. It's loaded with carbs that fuel performance and recovery. And they probably weren't eating any of that shit before, right? Yeah, okay, you got a team nutritionist. But what are those guys doing on the weekend? They're partying. They're eating takeaway. You know, they're drinking. Like, they're unhealthy, you know, they're just freak genetic freaks. And what about all the other athletes? What about all the other teams that smashed them?
The
Patriots.
I mean, the whole anecdote thing is ridiculous because I mean, like, hey, here's one Olympian who was on a team and came third in one sport. It's like if you want
to... Kendrick Fast not even in the A class in the Olympics.
So I was talking about the cyclist.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, like, those anecdotes are crazy because here's the thing with like Olympians is Olympians almost never fall for just diet fads. So it's the masses that are constantly falling for diet fads.
Right.
Like, oh, now we're low carb. Now we're keto. Now
If
you actually look at like top performers in sports, they generally just eat the right things and they use performance enhancing drugs over the long term because they're just not dumb. They've got too much on the line. Like, that's just like not what's happening. Like Usain Bolt eats chicken nuggets, whatever. Like he doesn't fall for diet fads. They just like do the right thing. So if vegan was like this crazy performance enhancing thing that takes the guy from 10 minutes on the battle ropes to an hour, like they try, which was honestly the silliest part of the whole movie.
That was ridiculous.
If it actually did that,
if then it even happened, yeah.
It wouldn't be like we found these four or five small top performers. It would be like, dude, actually nearly everyone at the very top is vegan.
Mm.
When the truth is the opposite, nearly everybody is not vegan.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the whole premise for the movie that before it even started as well was when they're introducing this guy who's basically the narrator for the movie, right? He like shares his story, gets injured, blah, blah, is like this like super average MMA fighter. And I'm like, okay, so we're doing a whole movie on nutrition right now and I'm waiting for the scientist to come in. I'm waiting for the nutritional scientist to come in. No, we actually got a guy who's a meathead, like, I read 4,000 papers on this. I'm like, yeah, but you're not a scientist.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't go to university. You don't know how to interpret papers. You don't know if this study's good, if it's bad. He's just reading studies and just probably going straight to the abstract and going, oh, yeah, it turns out like vegetarians are like more powerful.
His mind was blown when he found out glucose fills your muscles, not protein.
Yeah,
glycogen. He's like, dude, this took me on a journey. I'm like, dude, people, you learn that when you're 14.
Yeah, he's basically, you're choosing a very unintelligent person to talk about.
He was uneducated on the topic.
Yeah, to go and do all this research and then bring all this science into it and then interview these people. I'm like, this is just ridiculous. But the problem is, fucking James Cameron produced it, so it's so well made. So it's so convincing for a lot of people. I almost saw people nodding in the cinemas. I'm like, oh no, what has happened here? But look, it's just where the money lies, right? They've gone up to these celebrities. They've gone, hey, we've got this Beyond Meat. Here's some ethical reasons.
Yep.
Here are some bullshit studies. Arnold Schwarzenegger's like, all right, Leonardo DiCaprio, who also is sponsored by Fake Meat. I believe you. We're friends. You're a smart guy. You've had smart guys talk to you. I'm going to make a shitload of money. Let's do it. You know, it's not that hard.
And I think a lot of people who are like behind this, they're in it for more the ethical reasons, which I'm not saying is like a bad thing. Like factory farming is not good. So they're like, it's so good. Let's get the world like not eating meat because it's so bad, like disgusting, killing all these animals. But the whole movie was about the new health nutrition benefits, which is just not true.
Yeah.
So they're like bullshitting for maybe a good cause. But I don't think like the means justifies the ends here.
The movie I want to watch on this whole thing is the movie about the environmental impact. Because I still wonder, okay, yeah, factory farming, right? Is like, it's kind of gross.
Yeah.
Kind of fucked up. But, okay, so let's play out some potential realistic solutions and what they look like. Because if you got rid of all the factory farms, right? I mean, let animals just roam wild and we stopped eating animals. You need a shitload of farms for almonds and plants and vegetables and stuff.
Well,
right?
I think, did you listen to Vegetarian Myth?
I
think we talked about it once before. So, a really good book called The Vegetarian Myth.
No,
I'm trying to get the author on because I noticed that she was on the Precision podcast.
You have talked to me about it.
Basically, a book came out in 2009. There's a really good audiobook. It's like 8 hours. And basically, it's this vegan girl who basically, you know, like a lot of people, nearly died on vegan.
Yeah.
And then she ends up going to eat meat. But her whole thing was like, I wanted to know the sustainability and the ethical things behind it because I feel so bad about it. And she digs into it and she's like, basically, it's a myth that it's so much better for the environment to be vegetarian and vegan. Like, it's a propagated myth because they're still clearing land.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's the manure they use to grow all the grains and everything?
Dead animals.
It's either dead animals or fossil fuels.
Right.
So, it's horrific for the environment.
Right.
So, she just, like, digs into it and she's like, it's actually not, like, you know, growing plants in your backyard, which is, like, really good for the environment, it's just, like, not a viable way to actually feed the world.
Yeah.
So, she's, like, basically goes into how it's, like, it's a myth. And things like, you know, creating meat without actually killing animals is awesome, but it's not like when you go and eat grains and vegetables, you're just doing incredibly good things for the environment.
No.
You are still clearing forests. You're still wiping out species. Animals are still dying in this whole process.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I would love to try and get it on the podcast, but it's to say it's like scot-free on that end is crazy.
Ridiculous.
And I think that even reminds me, probably the most crazy part of the whole movie was, like, if you want to talk about anecdotes, besides this girl that nearly died, like, my girlfriend was vegan. I think you remember that night she like passed out when we were at that club. That happened like
Cat's 30th.
Yeah, Cat's 30th. She fainted a couple more times. Okay,
so she was still vegan at that
time. She was still vegan.
Right, right.
Ended up going to the doctors and everything. They're like, your iron's crazy low. Started eating meat. Gone forever, right?
Yep.
Felt so much better.
Yeah.
Had a school friend who was Indian. Same thing at school. Ended up getting fed meat in hospital. Now, these are obviously anecdotes. I'm not saying like everyone that goes vegan has these problems.
Yeah.
But it's unbelievable that that wasn't even raised on the movie.
The vegans get sick.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
They tried to pretend it is like that guy, the super strong guy, who they try and pretend is the strongest man in the world.
The guy that breaks one world record.
He's like,
he's never won the world's strongest man.
He's like, I put out a book. Every single person that got back to me and tried the diet said it was incredible. And like, I know from experience that people have bad experiences on vegan.
Yeah.
All the time. And they, and like, I thought it was irresponsible at the end of the movie. I mean, we walked out at the extras. The extras are so boring at the end where they're just sales pitching you.
Yeah.
But to just be like, you know, they don't mention supplements outside of one vitamin B supplement.
Yeah.
They're just like, you know, don't even really worry about supplements. Just go vegan, get your whole family on vegan, and it's going to be incredible.
It's outrageous.
Man, it's like, I just can't believe like they could have the conscience for that.
Well, also the stuff they did on phytoestrogens, how they block the receptors, the estrogen uptake receptors. Like, that mechanism is not good. Like, I was reading in that article, them talking about that particular thing. They're saying that it actually has positive health benefits. You blocking estrogen uptake is not good. Like, that has different health consequences. Like, that has different negative health consequences down the line. Because you need estrogen, right? It creates a balance between testosterone and estrogen. And that keeps the cycle of all your different hormones and all the different pathways healthy. If you block uptake of estrogen because you're eating so many phytoestrogens, you're going to cause different health products. So that article helps explain that, but to go out there and start saying all those things like fact and putting faces behind it, big celebrities that people trust, it's just very dangerous.
So dangerous.
It's very dangerous for people's health. That's the problem, right? It's people are going to get sick and that's not good. Right? People getting sick, that's like worse for the economy. That's like worse for the environment. That's like more pharmaceuticals, more medicine, like, unproductive workforces, high medical bills, health problems, reproductive problems, like you giving yourself such a whole host of issues. Because as I learned in a week, the average person is not going to be able to do vegan. It is so difficult, right?
It's well,
so
not do it well.
Exactly.
It's quite easy to do it poorly. You get your vegan Cornetto ice creams.
Yeah, easy.
Like you can eat whatever,
bananas,
right?
Apples, nuts, seeds all day, but you're not eating enough protein.
And the people that are convinced by the movie are people that already don't know much about nutrition, so already probably don't eat a very good diet.
No.
So the odds of them pulling off vegan... a zero.
Yeah. So, and also the price increase, right? It's just most people can't afford to spend an extra $50 to $60 per person on vegan a week. So, that's just the only problems. Look, in terms of a production, the movie's really good. It's entertaining, right? If it was for something that wasn't propaganda, it would be like a good 9 out of 10.
But that is what it is. It's propaganda.
It is propaganda.
Because if it wasn't propaganda, they would at least have spent 30 seconds out of an hour and a half movie on the other side to the story.
Yeah.
But they don't. It's like, you know, in like the Third Reich, when Hitler's bringing out his movies that all the Germans watch, they weren't like, oh, other side to this story. You know, Jews are pretty good people sometimes. Like, no. There was none of that shit. It was one-sided. And that's propaganda.
Yeah.
This is also propaganda.
Very one-sided. Okay. So, I'm going to give it out of 5. I did not enjoy it, but I was disappointed that I had to go to the cinemas for it.
Mm.
So, it's definitely a stay-at-home Netflix sort of movie. So, I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5.
Yeah, I was going to give it a 3, but then we stayed for the after credits where they're like...
Which they lied, by the way. They said, hey, there's going to be bloopers. It's going to be hilarious. So stay
it was not hilarious.
No, it was just more of the same shit.
It was worse though. It was like so repetitive, and it's like a sales pitch over and over again. We had to walk out. It's been a long time that I've had to like walk out of a movie while it was still going. Yeah. I think actually was pretty happy to, you know, see it to the end.
Yeah, yeah.
That like really put a bad taste in my mouth. It's such a bad finish. That took it from a 3 to a 1.5 out of 5.
All right, guys, the message is be careful what you watch. All right, awesome. If you guys are interested in the Whoop Band, you go to whoop.com. Use Mind Muscle when you check out. It's going to save you 15% off your first year.
What I didn't realize was another member at my gym just got the Whoop Band, and they got a mad band. Like, we've got the black band, no, but they have, like, some sick bands coming up. You can get the Aussie, like, flag in a band.
I'm going to get a few different bands. You can get a gold band and shit. Yeah, dude. I'll pimp my band.
I want to be, like, Soldier Boy. With my I'm going to get, like, 9 Whoop Bands, all different colors.
There you go, guys. All right, thanks so much for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.